That was the first part of the discussion. We now continue with the podcast on road safety. Volvo Trucks and Buses is the only truly global commercial vehicle company that applies test procedures that exceed standard safety tests.
Thanks. And we are back with our media roundtable on road safety. In the first half, we've spoken about the actual vehicles and legislation, statistics and such. In the second part, we would like to talk about the actual people that make roads safer, which is the drivers, particularly drivers of commercial vehicles, trucks and buses. This time around, I would like to start with Mats. There is a trend that commercial vehicles are becoming driverless. So what we have to imagine is that a truck will be using technology in order to drive from A to B. There will be someone on board to ensure everything is working fine. But de facto, the truck will be driving itself. Plus, there is the so-called platooning. So you see a group of trucks basically driving in a convoy, 6-8 trucks. And basically they maintain the speed, they maintain the distance. So Mats, would you say that this driverless technology would dramatically increase safety on the roads?
So first of all, technically, as you indicated, Stefan, this is possible. It's been possible for some 5-6 years. We have a number of systems that allows for this. So we have collision warning systems, we have emergency braking systems, we have adaptive cruise control. We have lane change support, etc. So technically, it can be done. Then legislation-wise, that's where we have to then have the right setup to avoid interferences, to have dedicated lanes for these kind of platoons or road trains. And you could also connect cars to these, just to mention as well. Will it help to increase safety? Yes, it should. As long as we have the right environment with these trains, let's say, move along at a set speed, there would be less less risk of human error. There would not be people less, as you indicated, Stefan. There would still be someone on board. I don't see the truck on its own. Somebody still drives it up to this lane, puts it in the train, but could then disconnect, let's call it supervise, but the truck would be essentially driving on its own.
Okay. Sean, in that connection, what do you see is the biggest issue in driver behavior? You spoke about a few things that affect the road safety early on, but from your experience, what is it that most people would do wrong or where the issue really is?
One of the key things probably with drivers is always, we are always rushing for time. Yeah, having to do the delivery, getting the job done. So how do we manage drivers in order to control what they do? Sometimes it's trying to develop policies within the company. A road policy that is strong, that manage the journey that the driver does, what routes they can do, what the driver has to do when they do the driver change, how many hours they drive, even controlling up to a point when the vehicle should be maintained or what type of condition the vehicle is, rather than hope that Pushpa.com will tell you what it is after the inspection. Yeah. So developing a very strong policy within the company is very important to develop and build on driver safety. Because without a policy that is strong, drivers will do what I want to do. As long as I can make more money, I'll go.
Okay.
Can I add something again, Stefan?
Please, yes.
So one of the things we say in Volvo is that for a country to become a developed nation or a high-income nation, we see two fundamentals. One of them is education at the right level, and the other one is an efficient transportation system. So we refer to the transportation system as the lifeblood of the economy, and the drivers then are the backbone of this. So I think it's people that are extremely important, and we have to help them to be in a safe environment, and that's something I would like to highlight here.
Okay, very good. And I'm very happy to introduce to the panel Vijay, who is a manager for human resource, admin and credit control in Taipan Co. And one of the things that I think every one of us would like to know is the profession of a truck driver, is that a good job?
Well, thank you, Stephen. I would say the profession of a driver is a very good job, but unfortunately in Malaysia, it is not regarded as a professional job because we do not put so much of emphasis on getting good quality drivers and providing them opportunity to be trained, to be skilled, in this particular area. So that is the reason why you have a lot of drivers who are not skillful, who are not well trained in this country. But if we can move forward to this part where you make this the driver as a professional, and give them good training, equip them with proper skill, I'm sure it's a very good job to consider. Because basically at my company, at Taipanko Sdn Bhd, a driver on average, easily earns between 4,000 to 5,000 ringgit. So I don't see the reason why people doesn't want to come to this industry and become a driver. But if you give them a good opportunity, give them the training, provide them the necessary skill, and create the awareness and make this this particular job a professional job like some other countries, I'm sure you get good quality drivers and a good in this particular industry. Thank you.
Thanks. Let's stay on that. What are you doing then in order to ensure road safety?
Road safety, okay. As far as Taipanko Sdn Bhd is concerned, in my company, okay, safety is very important for us because the trucks that we have is a very expensive equipment. I cannot just simply put this truck on the road and give it to someone to drive it, because it's also cost to us and it's also safety to other road users. So as far as Taipanko is concerned, all those drivers that we employ in this country, in this industry, come into Taipanko, we make sure that these people are well-trained, they're given the necessary training, awareness creation, safety training, defensive training. We have our own in-house training modules developed over the years, and we ensure that these drivers go through all this comprehensive training. Only then they're put into the road with the trucks. So safety is number one for us, because anything happens to our truck is a cost to us, and also anything happens to our driver is also a cost to us. So life is important. At the same time, as a company, the vehicle is also important to us. So safety is always a priority for us.
Sean, on that note, how often should you go for driver training?
Basically, if you look at human studies, 18 months is the ideal time, maximum, nothing more. Any more, we all have perishable skills. Whatever you learn today is going to go down worse and worse as weeks and months comes. So if it was a new company which developed safety programs, I would say maybe either quarterly or every half a year would be best in order to build the culture and build the drivers to understand the need to be safe drivers.
Mm. Thank you. Mats, what's more important than for road safety, the truck with all the safety features or the driver?
Once again, I think both are very important. We're in it together, if I can put it that way. But if I look at the statistics that we have, and one of the things I would like to highlight is that since 1969, we have what we call accident research teams. So whenever there is an accident in Sweden and sometimes in other parts of the world, we're informed and we try to go to the site if we think there is something new to be learned, to understand what were the causes of this accident and how can we prevent it from happening in the future or limit the impact. What is most important? Our statistics show that 90, I've heard another number here before today, 80, but 80 or 90% of the main cause of accidents is the human factor. So it's extremely important. So maybe the answer to your question is that the human factor, training, awareness, etc., is today maybe the one where we can make most progress.
Okay. So over to JPJ. Should there something be implemented, like a law that is asking drivers for refresher courses? I mean, this is done in Europe. You have to almost renew your license on a biannual basis. Would that make sense here as well?
Okay. Actually, in terms of driver competency, actually, I'm not competent for this, to answer this question.
Okay.
Especially because I'm from Division for Vehicles Regulation. So
okay.
It's quite hard to me to answer that question, actually. So I feel so sorry.
Yeah, okay. Then we leave it at that. I hear from Kyriel that you have a case study on driver behavior and how it impacts road safety. Do you want to talk about that for a bit?
Okay. Just to compare to Japan statistics, Japan enforced traffic safety education 1971. During that time, the fatality in Japan is around 17,000. 20 years after that, the statistic goes to 11,000. Then, the next wave is that they implement the improvement of passive safety performance. Another 25 years, now it reduced to around 4,400. So, what we can say that road safety is a long journey. However, it can be shortcut or it can be improved by learning from experts, by learning from what we, the developed nation like Germany before, like Sweden, even Japan. Then we can implement the measures so that we can have a fast track improvement. But I think 2-3 years before, the accident in Germany is increased again. It's because people feel that the cars that they are driving is safer, and they are driving it faster maybe. And we also need to cater those spring back problem, I believe, before it's happening in the country. So we are learning from various countries. And I believe Sweden is the best country to look at. That's why Volvo is there. But our Southeast Asian region, our market is dominated by Japanese, even for the cars. So we try to learn from many countries. And I think if I can add that for Myros, we also have the road safety measures like safety star grading. We are giving not only staff for the cars, for the bus operators per se. If the bus operator is good in conducting the management, in practicing good road safety, and even for the vehicle itself, we are giving a good star rating to them. And for this, we hope that a consumer can choose a better star rating for their transportation. And if I can add also that Dosh have the ICOP code of practice for safety, health, and environment. So various department in government is trying to improve this driver behavior in many ways. As we can see, that enforcement is very important. But the most important things that we should look at is perception of being caught. Perception of we, as a driver, of being caught by the police or road transport department is more important than the enforcement itself. So the initial enforcement that we have done until today, I need to think about how we have to attack the mind of driver by provoking that. There's always a perception of being caught. Then I believe they will behave well. The driver will do their best on the roads, and we can have a reduction of fatalities.
Mm. Okay, interesting. Again, over to Sean. We talk about driver training and courses and economies and cost savings. Could you just tell us how much is a driver training course?
Driver training for light vehicles to heavy vehicles, I would say in the market, you're looking at range of 300 to about 1,005. per person.
Okay. And once you've done that, how long might it take to recuperate that cost? Because most operators would look at ROI, return on investment.
Well, take for example one customer that I was talking to. They calculated that their cost to the company of having accidents comes up to about $10 million per year. So that's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So how much money can you use? 20% to do the training? And I like to focus on road safety as a sense of the old traditional way, the 5 E's. Education is important. How are we going to achieve in terms of educating all these drivers in terms of safety? In terms of enforcement, yes, the police can do certain things, but from the company's point of view as well, what can the company do? Do we enforce that drivers follow the company policies as well as road laws? In addition to enforcement, do we have policies to reward the drivers rather than punitive? We all hate getting summoned. So can we do a system where we reward drivers instead of giving them summon all the time? Some people just don't care summon, also summon lah, pay only lah. Yeah? In terms of engineering, we have people like Volvos who concentrate vehicle safety. But engineering can do so much in terms of vehicle safety because at the end of the day, it comes back to the companies. Are they prepared to maintain the vehicle well? And is the driver equipped to check that the vehicle is roadworthy to use? Or is it as long as I can start the car, I'm going to go? The fourth one, environment. How's our environment? Are we going to accept that our drivers will do what they do as long as no accident? Or are we going to develop that all drivers are going to pressure each other to be safer drivers rather than wait for police or JPJ, then, oh, I'm very good driver, drive slowly. Pass the roadblock, okay, all hell breaks loose again. Which is why it comes to the fifth one, which is egos. Who don't have ego? All of us got egos. But when we get on the road, are we going to show our ego that all the international language comes out in the car? Or are we developing egos that, okay lah, people are rushing, let him go first. What are we doing at the end of the day? So it comes down to the one person that is most important, lah, me. Yeah?
Okay, thanks. I believe Volvo has a very interesting initiative called the Fuel Watch. Now, Fuel Watch sounds like you're reducing fuel cost, but it does help to reduce accidents as well. Is that right?
Yeah, that's quite right, yes. So as you say, Fuel Watch, fuel is part of the name, so fuel consumption is clearly one of the objectives to help the drivers to drive more fuel efficiently. But there is a direct link between fuel-efficient driving, let's call it careful driving, direct link to safe driving. So and that is clearly part of our program as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can mention, then last year we had some 800 drivers. It's been increasing exponentially. So the good news, and we're very happy to see that there is a growing interest in the market for fuel-efficient driving and for safe driving. And as I said, we had some 800 drivers registered last year.
So it is drivers pressuring drivers to become better and safer?
Is it drivers pressuring drivers? There isn't clearly an interest from the drivers to participate, but we see it, of course, from our customers, the operators as well. They obviously see the impact, again, both in terms of safety and in terms of bottom line. How much do they save on fuel?
Yeah, I believe one driver from Taipanko was the 2013 champion, right?
Correct. And 2014 was Petikamas.
Okay. Vijay, did you see any change in behavior of other drivers?
Yeah, of course. You see, when we participated in 2013 for the fuel wash competition organized by Volvo, we did not only send one driver, we sent few drivers, and they participated in the whole program. And of course, one of the drivers came up as a champion. And what we did is that we utilized this particular driver who have become a champion for 2013 to come into the organization and train our drivers. What is all this fuel-saving issue is all about? You see, of course, the main criteria is to save fuel. But when you save fuel, that means you are driving safely. You're handling the vehicle in a safe mode. So that's very important. So we brought back this particular driver and we went through a comprehensive training for all our other drivers, where these drivers are put into training. And what this particular champion who learned from Fuel Watch competition from Volvo, he brought it down to the other drivers in the organization. And we saw significant improvement among other drivers on this.
Yep, thanks. Back to Myros, 80% of accidents are human error. Do we have any statistics as to what exactly happens? Is it fatigue? Is it drink driving? Can we shed any light on that?
Sorry, unfortunately, I don't have the details of this 80%.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe without having percentages, the four main causes that we see from human error is, you mentioned it, fatigue, tiredness, could be long working hours, could be the lifestyle, you have to make sure that you sleep well enough before you drive. Concentration, we talked about SMS, whatever distracts the drivers, is another cause of accidents on the roads overall. Excessive speed is a third major cause that we have identified. And the fourth one, the fourth reason for road accidents, and not just only for commercial vehicles, but overall, it's consumption of alcohol or drugs as well.
Okay. I was just wondering, with all the technology that are in the trucks, and we are all just human, and most of us would never ever even use all the technology that's in our smartphones, are the trucks over-engineered?
For truck engineering in terms of technologies, we for JBJ we allow that drop, because as long as the technology can comply all the regulation, all the standard has been imposed by JBJ, the trucks can be used in JBJ. We always invite all the technology to introduce to our truck. Yeah.
Okay. To the entire panel. So should we rely on technology?
Well, I believe to some extent, yes. But I would like to, point something here. You see, you can have the best technology you want in any equipment that you bring in. Especially like for us, a container haulage company, you can bring in the best technology in our prime mover with all the safety features you have. But the thing is, at the end of the day, the truck is handled by a driver. We concentrate so much on improving the vehicle, the safety on the vehicle, bringing in new technology. But we concentrate very less on the driver itself. Is the drivers is capable of handling these machineries? Are they trained to handle this technology? That's the biggest question. You see, if you have all the safety features in the equipment, but your driver is not trained to handle this equipment, they don't have the skill to handle this equipment, they don't have the qualification to handle this equipment, then the technology doesn't play any important role in, reducing, accidents and all these things. Because drivers in Malaysia, basically, they come from various background. They are not educated. Some of my drivers doesn't even have SPM. Some of them, they can't even read. So how are you going to train these drivers to handle such kind of technology? You're bringing sophisticated technology, but these drivers are ready to accept it, because they're the one who's going to drive. I'm not going to drive. So that's the biggest question now.
So should the overall society gear up to support a profession like the driver? Is that what you're saying? We need to.
Yes.
We might have to look at that.
Yes, we should move towards that. It's high time for the country to look into that.
Also, you've mentioned, or Matt's mentioned, one of the issues is fatigue, time pressure, and the likes. Is it that the consumer is putting too much pressure on the transport sector? Is it that you have to always deliver faster?
Yeah, I think so. Because, the port works 24 hours. The container haulage companies work 24 hours. The customer is pushing you. If possible, they submit the request in the morning. They want the container to be at their premises in the afternoon. They don't want any delays. They want immediate action. So as a truck drivers, as a truck operators, we are also put into pressure of, meeting these requirements. Because 10 years ago, you were only 5 hauliers. 10, 15 years ago, you were only 5 hauliers in Malaysia. today in Port Klang itself, you have almost 180 over operators, and each of them are fighting to get a piece of the cake in this economy. So customer commitment has to be met, customer requirement has to be met, and that put pressure on the drivers. As an operator, we push our drivers, that's undeniable. But of course, at the same time, we do not compromise on safety. When we push our drivers, it doesn't mean we compromise on safety. Safety is also important. Delays can take place, but safety must come first.
Can I add to that,
yep.
Stefan?
Yep.
So of course, customers will always want the best price, the right quality at the best price. So I think legislation is key here. And I think going back to some of the comments before, is enforcement of legislation as well. In Sweden, in terms, Sweden is a smaller country than Malaysia. We're roughly 10 million people. I haven't counted them lately, but we're roughly 10 million people in Sweden. And we have one fatality per day, so 365 in a year, roughly. In Malaysia, you have some 17, or I just learned 21, but around just under 20, maybe 17, 18 per day. And I think, but it's not because Swedes are wired differently. I think we have more of a fear of, let's call it fear of the policeman. The perception of being caught and the consequences of being caught is quite real. And I think that's a key here as well.
Hmm. So, but at the same time, we would have to have a bit of a mindset shift whereby we as consumers shouldn't be asking for the latest fashion in H&M like instantaneously. Shouldn't we give truck drivers a bit of a breather? I mean, here's the thing. We can either complain about a truck driver speeding, or we can complain about it being slower and therefore being safer. But being slower might have an impact on prices of goods, because longer working hours, maybe you have to have two drivers in a truck that then take turns. So all of a sudden your shirt in H&M is 10 ringgit more. And the question is, are we as consumers willing to accept a higher price in order to have safer roads? I'll just let that stand there for everyone to just think about it. What else? Where's this all going? So what you mentioned 10,000 deaths per year. You think we could easily implement something that would negate that trend? Is there something that we could do right now?
You mean for Malaysia case?
For Malaysia, yes. Yeah.
On the perspective of Myros, I believe that even though we are very close with UN regulations, I think we implemented 78 regulations out of 133 regulations. Some of my colleagues all over the world said Malaysia produced the safest car in the world, safest vehicle in the world, because we even implement more regulation than Japan itself for UN regulations. But will that be enough? No, definitely not. Because the majority of the fatalities is motorcyclists. Even though we're happy if the passenger car is reducing, some segment is reducing, but motorcyclists has increased. Mm-hmm. And that's why even for the car safety itself, we have requested manufacturer to have an intelligent system how to detect motorcycle to prevent the collision from happening. So each category of even for trucks, even for motor cars, for we need to have some things that can relate to improve the motorcyclists, because whenever we can reduce motorcyclists, the total reduction will be very significant. So as of today, as of every time, we need to put in our mind how to save these motorcyclists. And I think that's why the E-Strike project for Volvo taken place. And it's not just improving the vehicle itself, even for visibility for the motorcyclists. I think driver education is very important. And as I think Chandra did say, we have to see it on totality. And it's not one player. I mean, I think if you ask Myros is there and why road safety is not improved, the question is that we shouldn't have crime in this country because police is there. But everyone should put our hands together. Even if we can improve a bit pieces, then we can achieve by 2020, which we target 5,000 fatalities for that 2020.
Okay. Earlier you mentioned that in Thailand the number of road fatalities is even higher than here in Malaysia. As of this year, the ASEAN Economic Community is in force, which means that there is a free movement of goods. So eventually, trucks from across the border will be able to enter Malaysia. Will that have a negative impact on road safety?
Well, that's a tough question for me. Well, it depends on the transportations, I believe. And if Azharin, you can answer that, how Thailand's regulation is?
Okay. Okay, actually, I would like to, actually, on behalf of Ministry of Transport, actually, this this issue is come from MOT. But I also involved for that issue. In terms of transportation between ASEAN country, actually we have in ASEAN we have agreements between among ASEAN, what we call in terms of transportation for the goods, especially for goods. That's mean among ASEAN we have harmonized specification of the specification, the construction of the vehicles. So that's mean, let's say for example, the vehicle come from Thailand, want to go to Singapore, but in transit in Malaysia. So the vehicle from Thailand, the construction of the vehicle must comply basically all the specification mentioned under the agreement first, and the same time they should comply all the regulation enforced by the host country. That's mean the Malaysian. So that's mean in terms of the road safety can be we can minimize the in terms of fatality, the we can reduce. So that's my answer. Thank you.
Okay, are trucks ready for that, Mats?
Well, trucks
and buses.
Trucks and buses ready to move between the countries within the ASEAN.
Safely between the countries.
When it comes to Volvo trucks, yes, they are. And we have a network to take care of the vehicles as they move between the countries as well. Maybe I should leave it at that. Then we have emission standards that are different between the countries as well. So that's less of a safety issue, but it's more in terms of fuel that is available for the vehicles and so on.
You want the Q&A now? Okay, all right. Just checking if we should start with the Q&A here. I think unless anyone has comments or further add-ons, we could do the Q&A. I've already heard that there were some questions. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Let's start. Let's start the Q&A.
Okay, members of the media, we'll start the press conference now. So, do you have any questions for our guests in front?
Okay. Answered it all. Wow.
Right. Anyone have questions just now? Or...
I remember Vishal had a question. Yep, please. No, okay, don't be shy.
Thanks.
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. So my question to Stefan earlier, I asked him about telematics, and recently we've been doing a lot of interviewing of companies that offer telematics aftermarket, and in the course of the research we found that Volvo has Dynafleet and MAN Trucks has their own version of telematics. Now, I want to bring telematics into the safety issue.
where you know, you have in telematics, you've got speed control, you've got all these things. How far is JPJ going to push the agenda for telematics to govern truck transportation to increase safety?
Okay, in terms of that telemetry technology, actually, the policy is not under Ministry of Transport. Actually, it's under SPAD. So if I'm not mistaken, SPAD have enforced their regulation. That means they have stats all for the buses. For the buses have must install that mechanism for tracking their bus. But for the commercial, especially for goods vehicle, I'm not sure. Because maybe SPAD can give further explanation.
Okay, thanks, Azharul.
Let me add on to that. As we've heard earlier, road safety or defensive driving is not just about me, it's also about the others. I take the telematics the other way around. What you can do with telematics is a few things to improve the safety of your own goods and drivers, for instance. If, for instance, your truck is being hijacked, there is a button, a panic button, that would then trigger an alarm. So that would be one way to help finding out what's happening with your vehicle that could then be hijacked and used in illegal activities. So you have a measure of seeing if something is happening with your vehicle. Abrupt deceleration, which could be an accident. Just imagine you hit something, you abruptly stop, you get an alarm, and you could immediately find out what's happening. You could dispatch ambulances or your own staff in order to find out what's happening there. So you would actually improve road safety there. You could program your telematics so that it triggers an alarm if you're going too fast. TNT has a system whereby they would trigger an alarm if the doors are opened. Now, again, someone trying to climb on board or the door being opened accidentally, which could be a cause for concern. So you can do an awful lot of things with telematics in order to improve the safety, not just to track how many liters of fuel per 100 kilometers you are using. But it comes down to how a company is using it, driver times, where they stop, are they allowed to stop for breaks, and so on. So it can all be done. And yes, you can use telematics in order to improve road safety.
Okay, thanks, Stefan. Yeah.
Okay, so now I want to direct. Let's take the telematics and safety, and I want to direct to Mr. Vijay Taipanko.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, we have regulations on how long a driver can take a shift. You know, this is to govern fatigue and tiredness-related issues. Yep. So if, for example, at some point, you have these regulations where this amount of driving, this amount of downtime, and, you know, if telematics become compulsory in trucks and transportation industry, you know, you'll be able, SPAD will be able to monitor the trucks in the downtime. Now, as a company operator, more downtime is less revenue. I'm being general, but what I want to ask is, you know, how willing would the truck industry, in your opinion, be to enforcing and taking on board this sort of thing to monitor how much driving your drivers are doing to make sure that they don't overdo it, just as pilots do?
Okay, as far as Taipanko is concerned, 3 years ago, the management have decided that all our trucks to be installed with GPS system. Previously, we don't have this system. 3 years ago, we installed, where we have 187 trucks on road under Taipanko Sundaram Berhad, and all our trucks are equipped with GPS system, where we have a team, in-house team, who monitors all our trucks on the road in terms of their speed, in terms of their idling. Okay, all the drivers who are driving more than 5 hours, they are required to stop at least for half an hour for a break. And through the GPS system, we can monitor how long is this particular vehicle is idling. You see? So the GPS system which has been installed in our vehicle has helped us a lot in monitoring safety aspect and also in monitoring the driver's driving pattern, which is very important. especially when there is an accident happen. So this system actually helps us to investigate and then analyze. Okay, before the accident, what was the vehicle speed at traveling? After the accident, you know, all this helps us to analyze the accident and make a conclusion whether, you know, is the driver at fault or what action has to be done and what is the solution to this so that we can prevent this from happening again. So basically, if the government make it compulsory, I feel the government should make it compulsory that every commercial vehicle must be installed with GPS. Like for us, when we purchase a new truck, the moment we purchase a new truck, assume that we are buying 5 trucks from Volvo. Once the truck is ready to be delivered to Taipan Co, before delivery, we will make sure the GPS system is installed. The truck is only delivered to us after the GPS system is installed, because safety is very important. And this system helps us very much. So the government should make it compulsory that every commercial vehicle must come with GPS system. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is there any more questions? All right, then I will direct a question to Mr. Azharoon from JPJ. So do you think that imposing the stricter penalties for the reckless driving and also banning heavy vehicles from the highways will help to reduce road accidents?
Okay, currently we see that initiative is can reduce the fatality. That means then it can improve our road safety. Because we need to focus, especially for the commercial vehicle, especially for the goods vehicle. Because what we see based on the our study and also for the to the commercial vehicle, especially for the driver for commercial vehicle, as they don't have enough knowledge, especially about how to drive their vehicle safely, especially during the they bring the oversized loading. That's so we can see in Malaysia a lot of accident regarding for the commercial vehicle which is bring the oversized loading. That's why until now JPJ still see the initiative is still relevant right now to implement right now. So thank you.
Okay, thanks. All right. Okay. So I will end the press conference with a last question to Stefan. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this year's MIPTC is actually on Drive Safe team. So can you share with us some highlights about the MIPTC?
Yeah, sure.
To end the session.
Yeah. To explain what is MIBTC, MIBTC stands for Malaysia International Bus, Truck and Components Expo. We agree with the statement that trucks are the backbone of the economy. However, road safety is an issue. And we've taken this year's approach on road safety as well, because we believe it's everyone's task and duty to help improve road safety. There will be a driver competition, and this driver competition is open to anyone who has a driver's license. Even those that are in the audience that don't have a truck license may go and give it a go on a truck. I would encourage everyone to hop on. You'll be surprised how easy it is to drive a truck. At the same time, you will then understand what it means to be in the blind spot of a truck. It's quite scary if you think of it, thinking such a big vehicle, yet you disappear in your car and the driver can't see you. We have a networking night, which is also themed Drive Safe. I'm pretty sure that Volvo will have some activities around road safety. I know what they are planning to do, but I'm not going to give that away. And we hope that through these activities that are embedded in a commercial event, that we will create awareness, that we open eyes, and that we improve the road safety bit by bit. We know that it's not done overnight, but we would like to do our part together with industry government and the private sector in order to help the nation achieve that vision that you've mentioned earlier of halving the number of road fatalities. Thank you.
With this, we end the podcast. The staff of Volvo Bus and Trucks Malaysia is looking forward to seeing you at Malaysia International Bus, Trucks and Component Expo in May 2015.